Hi, I'm Rick Younger.
Hello, I am Dwayne Perkins.
Hi, I'm Tiffany Denise Hobbs.
Hey, this is Glory, and you're listening to the Call and Response podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Call and Response podcast with Felicia Fitzpatrick. And y'all, the sun is shining, the weather is getting warmer, it is officially Gemini season, so people are out to play. When it gets to this time of year, there's so many things to do, so many places to go, and so many people to see, but not necessarily so much money to do it all. Which is why we should all be super grateful for Gold Star's 20 Pop, where you can get tickets for as cheap as $20 to a variety of events. But that is just the beginning with Gold Star. They provide affordable tickets to theater, comedy shows, concerts, and so much more. So download Gold Star and let's make some memories, y'all. And I know every week I'm like, I'm so hype, I'm so thrilled, I'm so excited to introduce that week's guest. And surprise, surprise, this week is no exception. I am so excited. I'm so hyped. I am so thrilled to introduce this week's guest. She's a stand-up comic. And this is the first woman stand-up comic I've had on the podcast, which is like way
can
overdue.
Can I talk yet? Doing
it. Oh, like, okay. Sorry. No, it's just way overdue. So I get so into the intros, but it's way overdue to have someone like you on this podcast. It is Glory. I'll give it up.
Woo! Clap. Thank you. Bonjour.
I need a clap button.
It's okay. Is if we make it up? It's
but
improv.
You know. Right. Which you're good at.
Right.
I feel that. No, but I am so excited because, and I know we'll get into it, but like, stand-up comedy is just like old white men.
Yes.
But then there's people doing the thing.
Yeah.
And we need to like amplify their stories and lift them up.
And mostly like, and you know, part of the projects that I'm on, I know you heard about Strawberry Milk. I also have Pretty Funny Friends. And just as a black Latina out here, it's not even that they are the people on stage. A lot of them are the decision makers. And that is the big problem because it's like, you can be as talented as you are in the world, but if you can't get in the door, like, that they're the gatekeepers, and I'm just, you know, I don't want no problems, but I also just want to make some space.
Right, no, yeah. Exactly. And, like, let everyone know that you can tell your story, and you could be funny, and it'd be on the stage. Yeah.
And yeah, you should. And what I'm trying to do with the projects that I'm on, and even with my own comedy, is to give people a platform and to be like, I want to, wow, I never thought I could do that. Or whatever. Yeah.
So how did you initially get into comedy?
All right. So, you know, I feel like this is the question that everybody asks me. And I'm still like, I'm like a newborn in comedy compared to the years you have to put. Yeah, literally, I'm celebrating 1 year in April.
Congrats.
I know. But a lot of people is like, wow, like you're everywhere. I just want to caveat. I worked in marketing for 8 years.
Oh.
So like I married. I was like, oh, I've done this. Like I've done this for like big brands. Mm-hmm. Well, let me just take all these strategies and put it here.
Yeah.
So everyone's like, wow, you're doing like amazing. But it's like, I do have. It's something that, even on my way over here, it's something that has kind of like been, the signs have been there, but it was just one of those things which I'm sure with any project you've done that you feel like you're passionate about. So it's like, I never really gave it a real shot. When I was in middle school, like there was a talent show, and I've always, I've always been like the funny girl. But when I did it with my friend, I got on stage, I was like, oh, I can't do this.
Yeah.
So I put the mic down, I was like, I'm not doing that shit. That shit was mad embarrassing. And it's always been, like, in the back of my mind. I'm like, you know, I think I'm funny. I don't really like the stand-up that's out there. I don't feel like I can relate to anyone. Yeah. Like, only until they pop off, it's like, oh, this person's actually funny.
Right.
And then, so I went to college, and my major, actually, the major that I studied in college was performative speech.
Oh, very cool.
Which I never thought was, even when I was doing comedy, I was like, it was like, you're so good. I'm like, I never realized that I've actually had training in this.
Right.
Like, the building rapport with the audience and understanding like just different things related to performing. So it's like the art of communications and how we communicate across media and with people.
Right.
So I never realized, you know, and to be completely transparent, I needed to get out of, I went to Syracuse and I had a scholarship. I was running out of time. I like changed my major 5 million times. It was like the only major that would let me graduate on time.
Yeah.
And it was kind of there was like a negative stigma. Like it's like the athlete's major. Like they just put you there.
Interesting.
But I was like, I got to get out of here. And I really love communication. So it was too late to go into Newhouse. So I did that. I told you I ramble. We're going to definitely need a part two.
I love it.
Right.
I love it.
So I did school and, you know, I've had many, many jobs. And, at my last, the year before, I guess it was 2017, I got into a really big argument with my boss. He was a white gay man, which a lot of people's like, you know, I have issues with that because I feel like a lot of white gay men feel like they are minorities, which they are, but they also push these agendas that are not really inclusive. Yeah, and we can talk about that in the part three because we'll get there too.
So many parts, yes.
We just did not have the same eye to eye. At that moment, I was the president of one of the ERG groups and I was putting events together. And he was like, you're too passionate about that. And I had a lung cancer account. It's like, I'm over here going through messages of people dying every day. And it's like, you're telling me the one other project is just too, I'm too passionate about diversity. I was like, it just got to the point, you know, when you're in advertising, I dealt with so much prejudice, so much racism. Mm-hmm. And I just like blacked on him. I told him to suck my dick and I walked out of there. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's great until I realized I wasn't getting a severance package and I was so broke. I was broke. And, you know, we could talk about that in part four as well because of the documentary.
Right.
But that's that year, that moment when I was super broke, I was like, you know what? I've invested so much time into these companies, mm-hmm. into everybody else. And I haven't really followed anything that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. That year I did, and you know, a lot of the things when you want to do hobbies and passions, you need money for that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? And I was making a good like six racks, making 100K. Listen. So I was good, but I wasn't happy, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, the next time I get a job, I'm going to take time out to try to do one thing a month that is different.
Yeah.
So the first thing I was like, yo, I've always been curious about stand-up comedy. I didn't ever say I was going to be a comedian, but I'm like, let me mask it as like, I'm going to go for performing, like becoming a better public speaker and then going there. So when I did the class, and a lot of comics, they don't like telling you they took a class because they feel like it takes away from their natural ability.
Oh, interesting.
But if you notice, like, it's always kind of been there for me. Like, it's like, I did it in middle school, like, and I didn't even get to the ex-boyfriend part because,
There's an ex-boyfriend part?
Yeah, they be all over. They're all over, right? But it's always been there. Like, I kind of, like, it was kind of happening, but I never realized it until now when I'm like, yo, like, everything that it's all coming together now. Mm. And again, like, I'm nowhere where I need to be, but I know that I have, like, a really good compass for where I'm going.
Yeah.
So that's the long story of how I got into comedy. Like, long story short, I took a class, but there's backstory, okay?
Right, yeah. The context. Yeah. And you grew up in New York City,
right? Yeah, I grew up in Harlem, Washington Heights in the middle.
Yes. Yeah. That's where I live now.
Yeah, okay.
But did you go to like stand-up comedy shows as a kid or like theater or anything?
That's a great segue because that's how we're going to get into my ex-boyfriend. right. I never, you know, that's not something that's afforded, you know, to someone from our community, you know. Mm-hmm. It's something that's important. It's something that we have a lot of, I guess we, as people of color, we are the people that are the entertainers of the world. You know, we have so much to say, so much pain that comes from what we've been through, and so much like imagination from poverty. I'm like, everything I did, I made up. Like, red light, 1, 2, 3, you know, you're making those games up, you know? Mm-hmm. We don't have access to a lot. So I never, and even now when I produce my shows, I realize that people of color sometimes don't know about it, don't think they belong in those spaces, and don't feel like they can afford that stuff. And everything I do is like, it's cheap. I'm going to give it to you at a low premium before I become a legendary comic. You pay your $10 to come see me. And then later, just know I'm going to charge you $100. But just know I worked my way up.
Right. You saw her at the beginning and then you understand the rise.
But I never, I did stuff like in the arts. It was never, I would say theater. I guess like in school, like I was looking at your questions. I'm like I was saying, it was deep. And I was like, I hate locking myself into an answer because I never remember. There's so many memories and I can't remember everything.
Right.
But what I do remember in high school, I was the dentist of Little Shop of Horrors. I was the first female to cast that as a male role.
Yeah.
And really because I had a deep voice and it was like, you're talented, but you can't sing. Let's... You'll be the dentist. You have one song
on that stage,
and you have backup singers.
Yes.
So yeah, I was never like involved in the arts like that unless it was like through a public school opportunity. Mm-hmm. In college I danced. But the stand-up, so I was dating this guy, and we were together for, like, on and off for 4 years. Uh-huh. He was an asshole because, you know, right? And I remember the moment that I got into stand-up was really in college when, like, you just don't want to do any work, so you start finding shit to watch.
Yeah.
And I remember my friends putting me on to, like, Def Comedy Jam. Mm-hmm. And I also didn't grow up with cable, so I always tell people that there's a few things people are like, okay, there's a few, like, cards revoked, but I'm like, I didn't have cable. I didn't know this stuff was around me, right? So I remember one of the first stand-up sets that I saw was Capone, and it's this set about him like having sex with this girl and how like active he is and how he threw her up and like what it was just so funny. And I was like, oh, he's funny as shit, like whatever. And then that's when Kevin Hart was popping off. So throughout Kevin Hart's entire career, that's when I really started understanding stand-up, you know? And I remember I loved him so much because everything I wanted to say to my man, I couldn't vote. I couldn't say it, but he would say it. And I'm like, please watch this with me so you know how I feel. Like,
you can learn a little.
Yeah. So I realized that he was saying everything I wanted to say. And that's kind of like how I got into stand-up, where I was interested in it because I was like, you know, well, the first, like I said, in middle school, I was just doing it because I knew it was a thing. And I was like, oh, I'm funny. Anybody could do this. But it's really not. Like, there is just, I was reading an article yesterday about, and this is something I've been exploring a lot, like as an artist or like anyone that's creative, you question so many things. And one of the things I've been questioning is I've been having a hard time struggling from coming from such a structured, like I was in marketing, everything had an Excel sheet, like boom, 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 to like freedom, which is what I wanted. But my brain is not processing it. It's like you need to figure, like you need a plan.
Right, right.
And this article I was reading was like, you, in order, there's a balance between structure. If you don't have enough structure, you lose the art because you need to know the rules of it.
Right.
But if you have too much structure, you can't be an artist.
You're too constrained. Yeah.
Right. So it was just like, I forgot how I got there, but that's how I got into stand up. And I was like, and then I started, and even now, like there's so many people I have to study and that I have to look back at. But I definitely, my main, influences are Dave Chappelle and Kevin Hart.
Okay.
Kevin Hart, because he really, like, he is, I would say right now, like the Beyonce of comedy, like, and I know it sounds crazy, right? But he really, what he did was, and what his team did so well was market that.
Interesting. Right?
And what Dave Chappelle has done so well is like the art of actual comedy, like how he's able to tap into so many different psyches, and which is both, you know, marketing. Those are two marketing techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like learning from both of them, I want to marry both of those things. Yeah. Where it's like Kevin Hart is hilarious, but I feel like for me, the comedy that Dave Chappelle does is more aligned with what I'm trying to do.
Interesting.
It's like, I'm black, but I'm gonna talk to you white people about some shit y'all fucked up. Y'all got me fucked up.
Right.
But I'm gonna be funny about it.
Right. He makes it like digestible in a way, so he can like be real about it. Yeah. But it's funny.
But it's also like, stop shooting people.
Yeah. So I wrote this in my questions too, because I'm like, how, and I know you probably get annoyed with this question, but like, how do you build a joke? Like, when it's time to do a show. How do you build a joke when it comes to, like when you're getting ready to do a show and it's time to structure your set, what do you do?
I think the way to build a joke is you have an idea that you go out with, right? You have a plan, which again, it goes back to like the whole structure and being free.
Right.
You have a plan. It's like, today I'm going to talk about this Tinder date that I went to Africa on. That happened in my life. I talk about it.
Yeah.
It was a second date.
Okay.
Yeah. You're like, okay.
I'm intrigued. I'm like, I want to come to your show. Right. Yes.
So It's first you have the concept. It's like, oh, that concept is kind of crazy. Like, you don't, Tinder is already a platform that everybody on there's a creep. And then you went to not only a different state, city, you went to another continent with this man that you met. So that concept in itself is just like, okay, you're crazy, right? But it's, and then people, like, they get intrigued. Like, okay, I need to know what happened.
Right.
So then in that, I feel like sometimes I do a little bit of telling the truth, but also like exaggerating it, which is one of my favorite. A few of my favorite techniques are callbacks, misdirection, and exaggerate it. So like in my joke, like the plane turned around, I got press coverage.
Right.
It was a whole thing. But like you in the audience, I have 5 minutes to tell you this story that took a place over a course of like a few months, whatever.
Yeah.
And you in the audience, like you want it so fast. So I have to figure out how to make it be real, how to connect with you. All that stuff in like 30 seconds. And that's just like a little bit of the joke. That's a little bit of the joke building, because then you have to, you're talking, even though you go in with a plan, you still have, then you have the energy part of it where it's like, you don't know anybody in this audience, which is my favorite actually, because I feel like I do better in front of strangers than my friends. Because I feel like with my friends, they have an expectation like, bitch, you need to be hilarious. And it's like, no, it's too much pressure. That's why. But when it's just strangers, you don't know me, so it's like I'm gonna give you what I am, and if you like me, there's no way you can't like me. Like, this is not the plan.
Yeah.
But like, yeah. So it's like, I know it's convoluted. Everything I say is kind of convoluted. But the point of the story is that it's hard to build a joke because you can have a plan, but then my best jokes come from being on stage and it being winged. But really? That can't come unless I have a plan, yeah. If that makes sense.
Like you're saying, breaking the rules, like, yeah. Knowing them beforehand.
So,
yeah.
Like, in the Morocco joke, I remember, like, sometimes I'll get, it can be, like, one word or, like, one mannerism, and it's, like, it can change the whole joke and make it funnier.
Yeah.
Or, like, and that's why I'm still building those jokes. Like, they're funny, and I think it's great, but I know that they have so much potential. Like, I can put accents in there. I can, like, you know, it's kind of like baby steps. So, like,
yeah,
my process that I kind of create, which I've been working on for, like, 6 months, I'm like, okay, again, the marketer in me, I'm like, okay, there has to be a process. Figure out what is the process as best as you can, and then make shit up on stage, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So my process is, like, I have in my Google Drive, which is my baby, right? I'll write concepts out. I'm like, okay, this shit is funny. This, my friend said something that was really funny, and they may not know it. I'm like, yo, like, you saying that I wear this wig all the time, I need to talk about it now.
Because, right.
You know, there's,
it's become like a bit.
Right now, yeah, right. Yeah. So then it comes, then I'll do, like, my open mics. I'll put, like, 5 concepts I want to talk about, and then I kind of, like, wing it.
But, like, I'll, it's like a foundation.
Yeah, like,
you.
I'll talk about stuff, and then I'll see what people laugh at. And right. Then I'll, like, go back. I listen to all the voice notes. Yeah. Like, I listen to myself over and over again. And then I'm like, all right, I'll form a sentence. But I'm, like, it's yeah, I'm still figuring out. I think the answer to that question, I'm still figuring out that process.
Yeah.
Because it comes in different ways. But, like, I think it's about one of my, like, core beliefs is, like, there's no such thing as luck. It's like being prepared. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you do all the, as much as you can, mm-hmm. prepare, and then you'll be like, then you'll go out there and then you start seeing shit, like, in the streets or, like, mm-hmm. from this conversation. You're like, oh, I can put, like, a TV in the joke, or I can be like, it was shot for Love and Hip Hop. But it's like, it takes time to build mm-hmm. all that, because mm-hmm. you need experiences and you need places to go. Yeah. And that's just, like, in one location.
Right.
Wait until you take that joke and you go to Miami. So, like, I have a hoe yeah. section where I talk yeah. about being a hoe. And I went to Miami to this, like, Haitian open mic, and I didn't do the research beforehand. Uh-huh. And I didn't realize it was such a Christian community. So I'm over there on stage, ooh. Like, where the hoes at? And everybody was like, this, no.
Ooh, they let, oh no.
Yeah, so it works, like, in New York, because everybody's, like, free and, like, yeah, yeah, I'm hoeing. But then, like, when you go to, like, those different communities, mm-hmm. You're just, you're learning so much. And after the show, they're like, oh my God, you were amazing. I'm like, why didn't y'all
laugh in the moment then? Yeah,
but
oh my goodness.
It's a hard question to answer, because I'm still learning that. And I feel yeah. like it requires, like, you, your thought process, your experiences, people right. around your experiences, right. you actually studying. Like, I actually sit down and I ask people, like, I take Uber pools and I'm like, hey, like, where's what's a good community around here? Where can I go eat? Like, you know, yeah. what does this mean here? Because, like, I feel like there's so much beauty in the nuances, and that's kind of, like, the most important thing to me. Where mm-hmm. it's like, I want to tell you a joke, but I want you to connect with it so hard that it's like, you fuck with me so hard. It's like, wow, bitch, like, how you know about so-and-so? Like, I did my research. And yeah. I think I could talk forever, but even being a Black Latina, just because I identify as that does not mean I know everything that all my counterparts,
right,
people have gone through. And it's like, it's so great to, like, go to a different community and be like, wow, in Miami, as an Afro Latina, y'all do this over here. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so that's a whole different thing I have to explore. But
it is kind of yeah. like you were saying earlier, like, marketing, because you're tapping into people's mm-hmm. like experiences yeah. and their mindsets and understand. It's like psychology.
It
really.
Is. It really is. And it's like it's a mix of philosophy and psychology. Like, you're questioning the way people think about things.
Yeah.
And then you're also tapping into their mind, where it's like, oh, I can kind of change my thought about that.
Yeah.
But it, like I said, it's still something I'm discovering, because there's just so much beauty and so many layers to it when you're doing it right. Because even my experiences, I'm just, you know, I talk about whole stuff really comfortably, and everybody's like, wow, like, okay, I guess I'm going to go be a hoe too. Is that right? But it's like, it took me so much vulnerability and so much mm-hmm. of my own self-discovery for me to be able to actually think about it and help you find, like, a solution. I don't know if it makes sense. Like, it's
yeah,
like,
yeah, totally.
There's just so many layers to comedy where I'm still, like I said, I need a lot of time to figure it out. So totally. I'm okay. I'm patient. I'm like, whatever.
That's
it was
good.
Like, it takes 10 years. I'm like, that's fine.
Dang. Well, and so how do you feel in those moments, like you were saying, when people don't laugh? This is me projecting. I'm like, I'd be, like, nervous and scared. Yeah. Like, what do you do in those moments?
Well, you always have a one good safety joke where it's like, okay, I'm going to hit you with the plan B. like I always have like my baby jokes where it's like, you know, but sometimes like I like to think about the performing as it's not just the jokes. You're getting like the experience of me. Like I'm sharing my energy with you. Mm-hmm. So even if you didn't laugh at you didn't laugh at me, I had a good time.
Right.
I'm free. I get to come up here and do the scariest shit on earth. You can't do that, right? So it's like you could judge me as much as you want, but like I already judged myself. So it's like you're not laughing. It's like I know. Like when you're on stage so many times, you know you're gonna have moments when people don't laugh. Like I'm actually having a hard time actually within my own community, like some of those rooms to make them laugh because it's like more performative and it's like I need to be more like I'm kind of like, you know, I've been on the stage 5 times a week. So I'm like at every club, like where the hoes at. And it's funny, but like it's more and it's great because it's part of like the energy and the soul. But like Dominicans and like the Black community and like everybody else, they want to see a whole show. Like but it's great because it's a testament of how good of a performer you are. And some people don't want to, they don't care to be in certain rooms. For me, it's important that I make everybody laugh, even if you don't think I'm funny. I'm going to make everybody laugh.
Interesting. Yes. Yeah.
So, I'm not too hard on myself. It's like, I know I'm just starting out and I know that I'm building a foundation for like when I get really funny. And it's like Dave Chappelle has bombs. Everybody has bombs.
If Dave Chappelle can bomb,
Yeah. Honestly, bombing is my favorite part. A lot of people come after the show, they'll be like, oh my God, are you okay? I'm like, that shit was hilarious. Like,
that's the right attitude to have. That is right.
Like, I'll be at shows and this guy, and like one time I remember this guy, I was in Newark and I was like, hey, sir, you don't look like you're having a good time. He's like, I'm waiting to hear a joke. And I was like, so everybody, that's my time. It was so funny, but it's like that I'm never going to forget because now I'm like, I need to, what is it about that night that I could have made better?
Interesting.
You don't learn from like, oh my God, everybody like chanted my name. It's like, well, I did have a learning experience from that. I'm going to put that in my set, right? But
yeah.
So yeah, long story short, I really don't care. Sometimes it does, like it hurts my feelings more if other comics don't say I'm funny. Like I recently had that experience. But that's my fault for even asking for validation, external validation, which again is, you know, everybody says that I'm really good and I'm just really proud of myself because a lot of it to become today was a lot of self-work and like not needing validation, which is something I struggled with throughout my entire life, which is what I talk about in my comedy, which you don't need validation. It's like if you got on stage, you must have thought you were funny. So if you don't laugh, it's always one. And there's always, we have different audiences. Like,
yeah.
I'm not like, I want to make everybody laugh. I can't make everybody laugh. But the people that fuck with me, like, I know that I have a following. I got a newsletter. I got the numbers in my inbox. So like I said, marketer, I was like, I know I got 2,000 people subscribed and it's okay if I don't have one more. I'll find 5 other people somewhere else.
Right.
Yeah, so.
And so why do you think it is? Because I even think of like Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is now being like a woman comic and celebrating that. But you get to see in that show, and I know you experienced it firsthand, like the sexism and the racism and the like homophobia and transphobia. Like what gives? Like, I don't know.
When I first got into comedy, I was like, you know what, like I would go up to people and like, you know, I don't like what you said. And mostly if it's something where I felt like you have an identity crisis, like that shit is not even funny. I don't talk to white people about their racism because that's your problem. You're gonna die with that. You're gonna be in your side of hell. I'm not gonna be there, right? So it's fine. But somebody that is a minority, are you from the city, from New York City?
No.
There are specialized high schools in New York City. And at that time, they were saying that the numbers for Black and Latino students were very low. And they want to, they just want to create more spots for that, you know, assist. And obviously, we know that that's a whole systemic situation. And this young man, he was an Asian man. And he had said some shit on stage about, like, it just came from a nasty place. And you could tell when somebody, that's not even a joke. Like, you were being nasty. You're like, why are you letting, he had said some derogatory term about Black people. And I was like, after the show, I was like, let me tell you something, honey.
Right.
I'm not about to be the comedy police, but I'm going to tell you about yourself because I know you're going to do that joke somewhere else and someone's going to fuck you up. I don't know how to fight, but somebody else is going to fuck you up, right? It ain't going to be me.
Yes.
But you need to really look deep into yourself and figure out where that shit came from because that shit is not okay. And you are out here in front of all these white people perpetuating this negative, nasty shit and giving them the leeway to even think that way. And it's like, that's not okay. Like, you, I blacked on him. I wrote a Facebook post and it took a lot of energy, but it's like at the same time, it's something that I think a lot of Black and minorities struggle with. I cannot be your life teacher. Like, you need to sit down and figure out your own shit. Mm-hmm. I have taught too many white people about how to not fucking talk about my fucking hair at work, and I'm tired, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you need to, I only told him that because I felt like, at that moment, I was still kind of young and fresh to it, so I was like, it really hurt my feelings. I think that's why I said something, because it really hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, but when it comes to racism in the spot, I did a show, and I hate to say this, but for my alma mater on Thursday.
Okay.
And one of the alumni there, he was a much older man. He was on his way out of life. He had to be like 80 or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's fucked up to say, but I'm only saying that because he hurt my feelings. He had to be like 80, and there was a comic there. She had just, she was an alumni. I put a show together to try to get all the Syracuse comics together.
Mm-hmm.
And she was talking, she had made a joke about like the state of the country, and the guy was like, you know, Trump, I don't know. He just started going off.
Mm.
And I was there with my plate of chicken wings. I had to get on stage, and I was like, let me tell you something, sir.
Right.
This is not what we're doing here. We're at a comedy show. If you wanted to be a comic, you could have did that. You could have found the time to do that.
Right.
If you don't want to be here, you can see your way out. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to do this. And obviously, I did that because I feel like I had command of the room. It's my territory.
Yeah.
It's my event. You can see your way out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But when it comes to like clubs and shit, honestly, I don't have the time. I already know. Like, I know what I bring to the world. I know that you are. When people say mean things, it's more about them than it is you. Even in your comedy, like, the things that you're talking about, it has to come from somewhere deep rooted. So that's why when a lot of white comics make racist shit, like, I'm a comic, I don't know. I don't like that shit. Like, you need to see where that shit came from.
Right. You can't be lazy with it.
I'm
going
to fuck you
up.
Yeah. Or I'm going to find somebody to fuck you up. Because, again,
you can't fight.
Right.
You can't fight.
So, I don't know. Yeah. After everything, I don't know how to answer that question, but, yeah.
Well, no. I mean, I just think that's like such a specific experience that a lot of people don't realize is that, even thinking about, like, representation, like you said, Dave Chappelle and Kevin Hart, but I don't know, and again, I'm not familiar with the world, but many, like, Black or Latina women.
First of all, I don't know any Latina comics. The only one I know is, I think her name is Angela, and she was Bonquiqui on Mad TV.
Yeah, she's
stand up, but and I don't know what's going on. I think I was in Maui at the same time she was, and I was trying to get on her show, but she didn't answer my DM. So
answer those DMs, yo. Right.
And there's like Monique and some more and Melanie Camacho. But I feel like when it comes to contemporary stand-up, like, I haven't really seen that. And I actually met, for me, I think the next person up is this woman named Janelle James, who we actually had on our show.
Ooh.
Yeah, so, cool. And I think that there's room for it, but again, it goes back to, and I think my mind, the way it works, I'm like, all right, everybody wants to go through Comedy Central, let's be real. Like, that is the avenue. Mm-hmm. Comedy Central, I'm pretty sure, it's owned by Viacom, which is probably owned by some white man. It's impossible for all of us to get those opportunities, right? It's just impossible. There is a certain, and even not just Comedy Central, we're talking about even the clubs, getting past at the clubs.
Yeah.
It's only like 6 really good clubs, whatever, in the entire United States. And we're all going after those opportunities. And of course, I will love that respect and notoriety, and I'm willing to like be patient for it. But I also have to make my own platform. Like,
yeah,
I'm not gonna
for
wait.
Sure.
I'm not gonna wait for opportunity to come knock on my door.
Mm-mm.
But when it comes to what you said, what was the question again about like racism and being a woman of color in comedy?
Well, we were talking about that experience and like, who are the women, the Black and Latino women you can look up to as comics, you know, like.
Honestly, a lot of people like have something to say about Tiffany Haddish and some of the, yeah. There's been some backlash for her. But honestly, if it wasn't for her and what she was able to do, even outside of stage, just being herself, I wouldn't have felt comfortable getting on stage, to be honest, because it's just like, nobody wants to accept you as you are, and you kind of have to do that shit yourself.
Right.
And I saw her being herself. She was like, you know what? Fuck y'all. I'm fucking famous now, so I don't give a fuck.
And right? I'm going to wear that dress to all the events.
And
she
it's
looks
like,
good in it.
I don't know. People, they just always have something to say. But if somebody's living their life, like, you can't really be mad. You got to be mad at yourself because you're not living your life.
Right.
Yeah.
And what are, like, the politics in terms, like, you're saying there's only 6 clubs. Like, how do you get in the lineups and stuff, like, how does that all that work?
So I guess I'm trying to figure that out. I was like, I'm me too. I would say Caroline's, that's my home base. It's always gonna be home base. That's a good class. That's where I performed at. And that's where I started. So you have to know the booker. You have to know, you got to get recommendations for other comics.
It's like relationship stuff.
Yeah, it's like a whole, it's really, and I feel like you mentioned this and I kind of went on a tangent. It's really the art of networking, which I've been doing for 8 years in marketing. I'm like, hey, I did this for you, whatever, let's do this, let's collab,
right,
whatever.
Right.
And it's like now it's like I have all that comes with me. So it's kind of like, I wouldn't say easier, but it has been a little bit easier to navigate stuff. And I think the first thing I was like, if I'm going to be in this world, I need to create something of value. I'm going to put two shows together.
Yes.
And I'm going to have you on my show. Even if you don't fuck with me, you did my show, I'm putting you in the advertisement. I don't give a fuck.
Right.
No, but and then back to the racism, the dealing with sexism. It's not anything anybody should ever go through, right? But it's something that I did go through for about 8 years. Mm. Harassment at work, being called a bitch, being questioned, being, there's a lot of racism. It's just, I'm going to always talk about that shit. And that's really why I'm mad and why I'm doing my comedy, because I want to tell white people some things, right? But, and dealing with men that just kind of like always want to fuck you. And it's like, let me tell you something, honey. I know for you, you just see a pretty face, but I've been working my ass off for 28, right. Well, I want to say 20 years, yeah. Eight. I know. I started working when I was 11. I was volunteering at libraries. I just always been working, right? And it's like for you to come over here and think that you're going to come and try to sleep with me because you're going to give me an opportunity. I don't need you. I give myself my own opportunity,
right?
And if you don't fuck with me, you want to say some shit, I don't give a shit. Like, I just have so much confidence and so much self-assurance in who I am and my brand that it's like, I really don't know what to tell you. Like, it's your loss, you know?
Right.
And I really, like, when men do nasty shit like that, I it's not really the right thing to do, but I try to, like, get, like, not put a bland eye to it, but just be like, you know what? That is definitely strike number one. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you on a list. You on a pervert list. And let me tell you, you're probably not going to get off that list. But just know if I'm in a room, you're not going to make my life miserable.
Right.
I'm going to be cordial. I'm going to be nice to you. But you're on my list.
And I'm going to do my thing. Right. And I worry about you.
And when you've changed your behavior, we can talk again.
Right.
Because, you know, it's still networking and everybody's at the same place.
And so, yeah, so then you, like, take control, which I love because you have Strawberry Milk and Pretty Funny Friends that are two shows that you run, right? Like, you curate. What has that process been like?
I'm happy you asked. Hey. I'm at a place where everything feels, like, everyone's like, everything looks so easy. And I think that is a testament to, like, if you're really good at what you do, it just looks easy. It has not been easy. I think that with Strawberry Milk, you know, I think the most important thing that you should have when you go into business with someone is respect for them, their art. I think that we all have such different backgrounds and such different things that we bring to the table that sometimes we have challenging discussions. And I think that we're so mature and, like, so focused on what – I actually just put a post up about, like, at this point, Strawberry Milk is bigger than us. Like, when you put three people together that come from where we are and are doing something that is so – it's never really been done. And if it's done, it's kind of forcefully done where it's like, okay, we're going to put some diversity on the lineup. It's like, no, we started this way. So it's like we are – and that's why it's catching fire so fast because it's like it came from a genuine place. It's like, this shit is not okay. We're going to change it. But we do have tough conversations. I myself have really been reflecting on what it means to be a leader. And I think the reason why it's important to me is because I can't quit everything I do, right? Like, I can't just keep telling people to suck my dick and going to the next thing. And right, I think something that Strawberry Milk has been able to afford all of us is an opportunity to really look internally at who we are. And for me, it was so important for me to really figure out what kind of leader I want to be, because even if I am an artist, I am an entrepreneur at the end of the day. I'm very Beyonce about my shit. Like, she is an
homecoming
artist, right? But she runs her whole shit, like,
right? She really does.
And I was like, you know, maybe the way that I talk to people, I need to change that. Even though my mom been telling me that for 20 years, but okay, mom.
Yes, mom.
I have an example
like
now, right?
Right.
The way that just because it makes sense to me in my head, I need to learn how to communicate that, and I think that's why it's been hard for a long time for me to be a good team player, because I'm not, if it's in my head, I don't want to explain it to anybody. I just want you to read my mind, but you can't work that way. So I think.
What's your astrological sign?
I'm a Gemini.
Oh, it's your season.
Yeah, I didn't want to like take, right. I was talking about it all day on Twitter, like, fuck everybody, I'm a Gemini. And I will say I have had some Gemini tantrums, right? But lucky for us, everybody on the team, we're compatible.
Okay, good.
Element wise.
Phew.
And I definitely looked into that before we got together. I was like, "What's everybody's sign?"
Right, we must know.
Right.
But how did you meet? How did you meet your partners?
So we all met through like Caroline's. Like, we did shows together, and we actually met Kate first. So I met Kate, and Kate knew Olivia, so we got together. And we you know, I told, and I'm very transparent with them and with everybody I meet. I told them I don't trust white women. You know, this is I'm doing this because at this place that I am in my life, like. You know, I was unemployed. I didn't have anything to do. I was October. I was like, this is what I'm doing full time, you know? And they were like, you know, I need to know if I work with you guys that you actually believe in this. It's not just like, I want to put Black and Latino people on the show. It's important that you actually believe in what this is about.
Right.
And I feel like they've come through with that and they've been genuine and we're good. You know, I still, you know, and I'm very open with them about the experience that I've had in advertising, how I was felt under, thrown under the bus with white women. Like, right. I felt like, you know, through history, we don't need to talk about the shit that white women have done, but you know, they've been around. And I tell them, like, it's not, it has nothing to do with you personally. It's just something that I have to deal with. And I'm grateful that I'm able to do this in a safe space, you know? Mm-hmm. It makes me reconcile some things that I have had issues with.
Yeah.
So that Strawberry Milk, Pretty Funny Friends has been a little bit kind of different because I'm learning that I kind of bit too much off too soon. And it's like the mission for Pretty Funny Friends was it's not only a comedy show. It's like a whole network. Like,
I love it.
There's so many Black and brown talented comedians. I need to be treated like the queens and kings that we are. Because we be going to these shows and like, they don't even give a fuck about us. Like, they don't even give us water and shit. That's why I was like, oh my God, water.
Oh my goodness. What?
I think the through line through that is just, it's been hard figuring out what kind of leader I want to be. Because yeah. I just can't be an artist and not own my own shit, you know? And it's been great because I have a safe space. I have people that, I'm lucky that I have people that care about me, you know? Because I could have done this with anybody else and they could have been like, you could leave, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I can't leave. I was one of the masterminds, right? But
they're like,
I mean, they, like, up, yeah, I've heard shit about like the CEO of Apple being kicked out his own team, so.
Right.
But yeah, it's been challenging, but I think when I look back at everything that I've done, it's been the best thing because I've been able to travel. Mm-hmm. I've been able to really bring value to the community and really like have a foundation where people respect me.
Yeah.
And I think every comic wants to be respected. Even if you don't think they're funny, you got to respect them for getting on stage. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know that I could walk away. I'm not gonna walk away, but I know that if I was to do anything, like at least you have to respect my hustle.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't care what you have to say about me, but that's that.
That is that.
Yeah.
Yes. Y'all, where can people follow Strawberry Milk and Pretty Funny Friends on social media?
So it's Strawberry Milk Comedy on Instagram, Facebook, and then on Twitter, because it was too long, it's just Milk Comedy.
Struggle,
so
yeah.
So S Milk Comedy. Mm-hmm. Pretty Funny Friends, it's just Pretty Funny Friends on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And then my Instagram name is Glorious Pretty Funny.
Yes.
So we're building. We got time. Like I said, we're going to do this. We could do this every year, every
yes.
month.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm actually working on a podcast. It's a solo
Ooh,
podcast.
Okay.
It's called Find Your Glory.
I love it.
So when I, like I said, when I was doing my little broke phase, which, you know, comes and goes, right? when I started to do like, the comedy classes and I took a salsa class, it was called Find Your Glory. Mm. And I wanted to inspire everyone to do like an activity a month to step out your comfort zone. But that became, the Pretty Funny vision, because I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna just take everything I did and do Pretty Funny.
Yeah.
So when I was looking for a name for a podcast, I was like, I don't want it to be like a comedy podcast. I don't want to put my, it's a lot of energy to be funny. I don't want to use it up just doing comedy all the time. I could be funny here and there, but to set up and structure, I don't got time for that because I want to write, I want to do a lot of stuff. So like, what is the most important thing for me? And I think like with your podcast, it's about inspiring other people. And it's like, I have so many friends. I've met so many people. And I want to just sit down and really figure out what is their, like, who are they at their core? What inspires them? And kind of like get a little bit deeper as to who the person is and their essence.
Right.
Kind of like a ratchet super soul, to be honest.
No, I love it though.
And I'm finding a media partner for that. And that's my next baby.
That's so exciting though. And I feel like all of these things that you're doing is like storytelling and connecting and like being real, which we need right now.
That's all I am. And I think I sometimes question like why I went through certain things, but it's like, I don't think that you could be, I would have never been here if I didn't go through every single thing I went through. And it's like, it's given me like such a great mindset to know like who is a good person to partner up with, what is a good deal, what is not a good deal. Mm-hmm. And to never, I don't want to ever feel desperate for any opportunity. You know, sometimes when you're an artist, I need to be on this show and you regret it a little bit or you learn from it. But it's like, I want to be able to know that I went into every decision strategically. Because, you know, at the end of the day, I'm a marketer.
Right. Look, you have the experience. Right. You know what you're doing.
So, yeah.
The last two questions for the podcast are as follows. So one being, if you could recommend a piece of like Black art, so if it's like a film or a book or a movie, what would it be?
So that was the question that I had the hardest time, because I'm like, there is just so many options, so many things that inspire me. But the first thing that came to mind, and I actually don't know who wrote it. I just know that when I was attracted to the play, the musical, I remember just seeing the three girls from Little Shop of Horror. And I know Tisha Campbell and Tisha Arnold, I think that's her name. They were the main people, but they were just put kind of like in the back of it. I was like, you bitches, you guys were the star. I say bitches a lot. Y'all were the star of it. But in terms of like a piece, that is so hard for me because I've been impacted by so much. And I feel like everybody's seen like all the classes. I'm trying to think something that is not so readily available. Means because, you know, obviously Fresh Prince, the Wayans Brothers.
Ooh, yes.
This might sound crazy.
Let's do it.
But I think if you... Because I don't know. I feel like I don't want to be ridiculed for it. But the movie that really inspired me was Scary Movie.
Okay.
And I liked the reason why. I remember being in middle school with my friend Colleen Lewis. I have to reach out to her when I make it so she can help me write some scripts.
Yes.
Whenever it would be a rainy day, we had a substitute teacher. Mm-hmm. They would have us do like an improv, like write your own like story or whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
And I don't remember the actual assignment, but I remember it was just so creative for me, and we would sit down and we would just kind of do the same thing they did for Scary Movie. Like, we would take a pop culture thing and turn it into our own thing.
That's funny. Yeah, and like it.
We would remake all that stuff. And that movie really inspired me. I know it's kind of like, you know, people have things they say about people, but I love everything about the Wayans Bros. Like, I love it. Like, yeah. They were responsible for In Living Color. Mm-hmm. Scary Movie, Same mm-hmm. Mind, that came mm-hmm. from that. And again, what I liked about that was taking something that exists, but like making it your own, and also kind of being respectful to it, because I think there's two sides to that. White people like to take shit and never give credit. I feel like Scary Movie did a great job of like, this movie is clearly from that, right?
Right.
But we're
right,
putting our own touch on it.
Yeah.
And then also they had the Wayans Bros. I used to watch that all the time with my sister, mm-hmm. and they also made it into a whole family thing, right, which is kind of like what I want to do. Like, I want everybody that's been my life, we doing this together.
Yes.
So I know it's crazy, and maybe that's not, like, the most, like, notable piece, but I think everybody should watch the Scary Movie franchise 1 and 2, because after 3, I think somebody else took it over, and you could see, if you watch the whole trilogy, you'll see like, it wasn't the same. Like, they tapped into something that was, like, a cultural phenomenon. It was this great timing, mm-hmm. great authenticity. And you can learn from that. When you're not authentic, that shit is not gonna flop.
I feel like I've only seen one of them. What's the one with the ring in it? Is that 3?
I think that's 2, where
two.
And you see everybody that was in that movie, like, they have grown into so many great things.
Right.
I think 2 was my favorite one, when they had like the basketball scene, and it was just,
that sounds right.
Yeah, it was just so nice, because at that moment, like I said, like, you know, I don't even have a lot of privilege to see stuff. You don't really see yourself on TV. And I remember there was a big Nike commercial that was going around, and they redid it, and it was just so funny to people like me, because it's like, yo, like, we mainstream, you know, stuff like that. So, like I said, that is, for me, comedy wise, something that I would recommend for you to watch.
That's even a good one.
Because I think sometimes people watch the art and they're like, oh, this is not funny, whatever. But it's like, no. Why did this person make this? What's the thought process behind it?
What are
the elements that they put into it, mm-hmm. so that it could be successful? Because those movies were successful as shit.
Yeah. They really were, weren't they?
So that's my on-the-spot answer, because I remember I told you I was nervous. Right. Like, I don't want to say the wrong thing, because there's so many things that I just can't remember, you know?
Yeah. It's a tough question. Mm-hmm. Everyone's always like, really? Like, I can't have, like, a top 10?
And then you feel pressure to be like, I have to get such a, like, educational answer.
No. Right? I think you just be authentic and be real. Yeah. Unapologetic, which I love. And so the second hardest question, if you could give a shout-out to a fellow Black artist, who would it be? And if you need to do like a top 5, that's cool.
First, Issa Rae, because she is literally doing what I want to do, right? She created her own thing. She's like, mm-hmm. you know what? I don't know what child's doing over there, but I am living this experience and somebody got to hear it.
Right.
And so many people related to that.
Yeah.
And then she was able to, she did that with her friends, Grassroots, created her production company.
Right.
And now she's the it girl. I'm sure she's really overwhelmed. But just like the stories that she tells, she plays, like, she really is being so inclusive. And I think that's what we're getting in.
Right.
In this new wave that's coming with entertainment, it's like, we want details, we want nuances. Mm-hmm. And I think that also applies to comedy. It's like this whole, broad comedy about feeling ugly. Like, we need to know details. When did you feel ugly? Mm-hmm. Like, they want details now. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Regina King, because so one of my favorite movies is Down to Earth. and she was it's with Chris Rock.
Okay.
And she was the main character in it, and she was fighting for like some civil rights thing. Ooh. Not civil rights, it was like a social movement. And just seeing her career flourish over 10 years has been so beautiful to see.
Right.
And then Regina Hall, like, I love how she kind of like rebranded herself.
Mm.
She was in the movie, I think, The Best Man. And she was like a stripper there. And Candy, that's my favorite song. She was doing a little dance. And for her to really rebrand herself and really like, you know, I think sometimes at that time we didn't have a lot of opportunities for roles. And I don't think that role was bad at all. Like, it's something that I can't be a stripper at a movie. I don't feel like I could be a stripper in real life. I just feel insecure sometimes. Mm. But seeing how she has always, she has flourished in her career and how she is she's getting all these roles now. So those are two women that I've seen growing up and grew up with and see them flourish. Yeah. And then Issa Rae. And I'm sure there's a bunch of other women, and I know those are the it girls right now, so this is like a cop out. But they deserve to be the it girls. Like, they've been putting in so much work they've been part of so many part of like these movies and things that have influenced me. That's what
this is a great list. Shout out to you ladies. But thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah.
We're definitely gonna have part 2, part 3, part 4, part 5, part 6. We'll just do a whole series.
We'll do annual reunion.
Yes, an annual reunion. I like that. But it was so good to talk to you today. And if y'all are in New York City, I highly recommend Strawberry Milk and Pretty Funny Friends. Y'all gotta go catch it.
Yay.
Until next time, y'all.